the opportunity to spend some time with you and to study God's Word. And I tell you what, I'm just knocked out by Stan Hogan's song, lady. Man alive, that's terrific. I tell you what, had to come to Tanner to learn how to lead a song, but boy, did he ever. Man, that is great. You hear him go, we've got a pie there. That's wonderful. Uh-oh. Anyhow, of course, y'all know that Stan and I, we go back, all those 29 years. We go back a long time. We've had a lot of adventures, we have, Stan and I. Down in Guyana, I think a lot of those that were a lot of fun. I saw Narvin last time I was down there. I said, Narvin, Narvin is a beggar in Guyana. Have you told him about Narvin? Well, anyway, Narvin is a beggar. He's a member of the church, and he's a beggar, and he goes out and he begs. He's all mangled up. He's just in terrible shape, except spiritually. He's the most tearful guy you ever ran into in your life. And he hooks on with us when we were there those times, and he'd go around with us, and he'd keep drinking Pepsi Cola as long as you'd buy them, and I don't know where he put them. He's a little bitty guy, but down there the Pepsi Colas are made with cane sugar, and so he just drink them and drink them and drink them. We'd watch him wait, but he did something. He never did anything. He must have just absorbed them. But anyway, we always wondered about his money, and we found out later that he'd go home and his family would take the money from him, or different ones, and it was a terrible situation. Not much we could do about it. But I asked him, I said, Narvin, are you a millionaire yet? He said, not quite. I wouldn't be surprised if he hadn't figured something out on that, because he was sharp. But he was always looking for Stan. And Stan and I had, one time we were, I don't know if I told you about this or not, but when my boys were young, I'd go to camp with them, a limestone Bible camp. And we'd get out there at night and get in the swimming pool, just the boys, just a bunch of boys. We'd play basketball in the pool. And, you know, Stan's a good athlete, good basketball player. Nobody could handle it. I had an idea. I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a big breath and I'm going to go down there under the water and grab his leg and pull his leg out from under him. And that didn't work. It was like trying to pull an oak tree, you know. And the next thing I knew, there was this hand on my head. And it was like a bear's paw, you know. He had his hand on my head, and I was ready to come up, but I couldn't come up because he had hold of my head. And as soon as I stopped wiggling, he let me up. You know, it was just the way that went. We're going to talk about Daniel tonight, and we love talking about Daniel. Do you remember this old song? It's an old bluegrass type song by Dr. Ralph Stanley. Some university made him a doctor, and the Stanley brothers. We all, you know, if you're into old time Americana music, you know the Stanley brothers. The song goes like this. I'm not singing it. I'm reading it. I heard about a man one day who wasted not his time away. He prayed to God every morning, noon, and night. He cared not for the things of man. He trusted one who would not fail. Old Daniel prayed every morning, noon and night. Old Daniel served the living God while here upon this earth he trod. He prayed to God every morning, noon and night. He cared not for the king's decree. He trusted God to set him free. And he prayed to God every morning, noon and night. They cast him in the lion's den because he would not honor men. He prayed to God every morning, noon, and night. The jaws were locked and it made him shout, and God soon got them safely out. Old Daniel prayed every morning, noon, and night. Now, brother, let us watch and pray like Daniel did from day to day. He prayed to God every morning, noon, and night. We too can gladly daring do the things that God will take us through. Oh, Daniel prayed every morning, noon and night. You remember Daniel in the lion's den. Now, I've given you a handout which covers a lot of the material that I'm going to cover tonight. And the first part of it is introductory material, and this has to do with context. And I think it's important, even if we're going to have a single lesson on the book of Daniel, we need to think about the context. Because this context is important because Daniel's life happened during a period of history of God's people. It's very important for Christians to know about this period of the exile, the Babylonian exile, and the events that led up to it. Now, you remember that the history of the nation of Israel is divided into three parts. You've got the period of the United Kingdom. This period followed the judges. Samuel was the last judge, and people wanted a king like the other nations round about them, and thus Saul, the Benjamite, was chosen to be king. David followed Saul, and then came Solomon. So Saul, David, and Solomon, those three kings form up the period of the United Kingdom. Now, the groundwork for the division of Israel and many of the problems that Israel experienced was laid by Solomon, who entered into many relationships with women, had a lot of marriages, a lot of concubines, a lot of wives, but he did this in order to cement the relationships with the nations around about. You know, he married these people for political reasons. And the problem is that this caused an even greater acceptance of paganism, the worship of idols, to come into Israel. And then after Solomon died, the kingdom divided. Rehoboam was a son of his, and Rehoboam was basically what I get from reading the text is he was a spoiled young man. He was the son of a king, and he was a prince, and he was used to having his own way. And when the old man came to Rehoboam and said to Rehoboam, listen, your daddy got hard on us here toward the end of his reign. You want to have a good relationship with us and the people, you'll just take it easy. You know, lift up some of these burdens. And Rehoboam said, he ignored the old man and listened to the young man. And the young man said, no, take care of us, take care of us. So Rehoboam said, listen, I'm going to make it even harder on you than my father did. And this created a lot of dissension, even in the south, in Judah. And then in the meantime, you see Jeroboam, who'd been a very efficient general, he had centered his power among the 10 northern tribes up around Dan and that area up in there. And so the kingdom divided. And Jeroboam ended up being the king of the northern kingdom, which ends up being called primarily Israel. And Rehoboam is the king of the southern kingdom, and that ends up being called primarily Judah. Then God eventually used the Assyrian Empire around 721 BC to take the northern kingdom away into captivity. And that took them away. And then that was the period of Judah alone. But Judah had an opportunity to be faithful, but they weren't faithful. And they continued to move further and further away from God. And they had 20 kings down in Judah, and only 8 of them can be considered good. And I've got them listed there for you. The two main ones that I remember toward the end, that I like to think about toward the end of the period of Judah alone before the Babylonian captivity took place, was Hezekiah and Josiah. And then God used the prophets to warn Judah, and you read about that when you start reading around 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles, and then you read prophets like Jeremiah and Isaiah. He warned them, but they didn't pay attention to them. Now, a prophet in the Old Testament is just a preacher. Well, that word prophet makes us think of somebody who's inspired, and they were inspired, some of them, but they were mainly just preachers, and they preached God's word. And in the end of that situation, God used a Babylonian king man named Nebuchadnezzar. Now, he had defeated Assyria and had consolidated his empire up there. And there were three carryings away of the captives to Judah. And with the last of those, Jerusalem was destroyed. We have a couple of interesting things to think about here. Ezekiel and Daniel. These are the major prophets of the exile. And Ezekiel was preaching in Babylon to the captives as they were kept by the river Chebar. Read the first chapter of Ezekiel. Ezekiel uses all these fantastic images, but it just boils down to he's telling the people of Judah that are in captivity, we're not going home until God's ready for us to go home. The false prophets were there, just like Jeremiah, he was preaching to the folks at home, and the false prophets were saying, peace, peace. There was no peace. So Jeremiah worked on them in Judah. Ezekiel worked on them in Babylon. Then we have the work that Daniel did. And Daniel, of course, a little different situation. During the first time that Nebuchadnezzar came against Judah, he took some of the best young men that they had and took them back to Babylon. The second carrying away was when Ezekiel and a large number of people were taken from Judah back to Babylon. And the last time that Nebuchadnezzar came against Judah, he completely destroyed the place. And you've got some details in there of notes that you can take a look at. Now, there toward the end, you had these ineffective kings of Judah, and they were supposed to be actually obeying Nebuchadnezzar. Thing to remember about old Nebuchadnezzar was God was using him to accomplish his purpose of cleansing Judah. But the people, like Mattaniah who became Zedekiah, they didn't pay any attention to what God wanted done. They continued to do what they wanted to do. And one of the interesting things I think about this is that we can see when we read Daniel and pay attention to the context that human beings are always trying to outfigure God. They're always trying to figure out how to do what they want to do without listening to divine instruction. And Judah was trying to figure out a way under people like Zedekiah, right there toward the end even, and had his eyes put out and all of that. But he's trying to figure out a way to get out of this mess without paying attention to God. So I'm going to go down and make an alliance with Egypt. Well, that didn't work. At that point in time, God had made sure that Nebuchadnezzar was going to be stronger than anybody else around. All of these things that happened to Judah, We can read about them and we can see how they make sense in a geopolitical way. Just like today, you know, we have all the politics of the world and everything. We look at it and we say, well, this one's doing that to get an advantage over this other one and all of that. We can look at it from that point of view. But the fact is God was involved in this just like he's involved today. We can't see it. We don't always know for sure that what he's doing or how he's doing it. Providence is at work. But the fact is, God was using Nebuchadnezzar to accomplish his goal. His goal, God's goal, and Daniel's a big part of this, God's goal is to take some people out of Judah and take them to Babylon, get them somewhat purified, or at least a remnant of them spiritually purified, which means simply faithful, and then bring them back to Jerusalem, because the prophecies and God's will was, according to Isaiah 2 and Micah 2 and other places, God's will was that the Messiah would come through Judah. Jesus is the Lion of the tribe of Judah. But Judah was so fouled up under the period of the United Kingdom that there was no way that could happen. So he had to cleanse the situation. And he did so using the Babylonian captivity. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, when he came down, he would take things from the temple and used them in pagan worship. This came to be a significant thing when later on you had Belshazzar's feast with a handwriting on the wall. A lot of that had to do with the use of those implements. But we want to center now in on Daniel. We've kind of got our situation situated. We've got Daniel and his friends have been taken away from Judah. They've been brought up to Babylon in the first carrying away. The group from Ezekiel has not arrived there yet. The group that we read about in Ezekiel has not arrived there yet. Daniel and a number of people that we don't know their names, they are there. But these young men, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, are some of the best. And Nebuchadnezzar renamed them Belteshazzar, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel was Belteshazzar, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they were taken to Babylon, and they were placed in a situation where they were under the master of the eunuchs. Let's turn over in our Bibles to Daniel chapter 1 and read just a little bit. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. See, God's doing this. Nebuchadnezzar just didn't do it by himself. God's doing it. With some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar. Shinar is just another name for Babylon. To the house of his God. That is Nebuchadnezzar's God with a little g. Not a real God, but who Nebuchadnezzar pretended that he had as a God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach a language and the literature of the Chaldeans. And then, you know, we know the first event that gives us a lesson to learn about Daniel. This master of the eunuchs. And by the way, you know why these boys were made eunuchs. That is so that they wouldn't be interested in things that young men are normally interested in as they get a little older. You know what that is. But Ashpenaz was given a job to do, and that job was, you make sure these kids are healthy. So they provided for them the best food. Now the problem was, and you remember this, that some of that food was not legal for a Jew to eat. Verse 8 it says, but Daniel, this chapter 1, verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. So lesson number one. Daniel was a principled prophet. He was a man of principles. Now here he is all fair in Babylon in captivity. And you would think, well, now, you know, he's in a situation that's unfamiliar to him. And he's away from home. Now, you can't expect somebody like that to keep his principles soundly in place when he's in difficult circumstances. I mean, he's away from home. You know, you'd understand a man's not going to eat that stuff when he's at home around all these Jews. But the only Jews we know that he was around were Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael. But no, Daniel said, wait a minute, I'm purposing in my heart. I'm not going to defile myself. I know what God wants me to do. And part of the old law, Leviticus has got it, a number of places it's mentioned. There were certain foods that they wouldn't eat. And, you know, I'm glad I was never a Jew in that time. I couldn't stand to be without pork barbecue. And they couldn't have it. You know, pork was something they couldn't eat. I was working for, my first good job was working for Alex Grossman and his brother and his son, and he had a Gentile thrown in there, and I was one of them. And one day old Gilbert Grossman, he comes back, they'd been over to the soda fountain and got him some supper, And I looked back there, and he had a ham and cheese sandwich and a glass of milk. And I said, "Gilbert, I understand that you don't do that." He said, "Oh, no." He said, "That's the real conservative ones. People like us, we eat this stuff all the time." I noticed he didn't eat it when his wife was around. So I think that was the thing that... But the point is, Daniel took this serious. It was a matter of principle to him. That's like when you and I go off somewhere. We go off somewhere, and you know, no Christians around. We're off way off somewhere, and we figure we're out there somewhere where there's not a Lord's church building anywhere, and no Christians around. We do what we want to do. What do they say about Las Vegas? You know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, you know? Yeah, but the Lord knows what happens out there. You know, I was sitting in a restaurant up in Virginia, and I was by myself. Totally by myself, and I'd ordered my dinner, and this one over here, they had some wine. This one over here had some whiskey and all that kind of stuff. And I looked over there, and, you know, old drunk, so I, you know, my mouth was watering. And I, most of y'all don't know what that is. But I said, "No." I said, if I order a drink, Herb Cheatham will walk in here. Y'all remember Herb? He'll come in. Or stand. Somebody like that is going to walk. But, the fact is we need to be people of principle regardless of our circumstance and regardless of where we are. Because, for instance, Jesus said in John 12:48, "He that rejecteth me and receiveth not my word hath the one that judges him. The word that I have spoken, the word shall judge him. The same word shall judge him in the last day." You know, it doesn't matter to me what you see me do. I mean, it does matter because I'm naturally don't want to be a bad example. You don't want to be a bad example. We want to be the best example. But the main situation is I don't want to be seen by the Lord as obviating or going against His will. We got to be principled. Now, you know, I raised boys. Stan knows something about that. Raising some boys, and boys are boys, and they can have certain things on their mind that they think they want to do. And I knew I could not keep up with every detail that they had to face every day when they left the house. You know, some people, especially some people that would be categorized as mamas, think that, well, now I'll know everything he's doing, and that way I'll keep track of everything he's doing. But we don't. We know that. Ginger knew that. So I told him, I said, "Boy, just remember your principles. Just remember the principles by which you live. Now, you're going to have a struggle in this life no matter what. But you need to be a man of principle. Anybody can, you know, be wishy-washy and do one thing one minute and another thing another minute. But the child of God understands that God's word's a lamp under my feet and a light to my way. And if we pay attention to God's word, no matter what our circumstances is, we can be principled people. And that's what we have to teach, and that's what we have to learn, particularly for our young folks, because it's tough on them out there. They have to learn these principles. I think there are three things that make for a principled person, and they are each one seen in the life of Daniel. The first thing is discernment. Discernment. Now, a person who is discerning, the first characteristic of a discerning person is somebody who's paying attention. A lot of times we get ourselves into trouble, we're just not paying attention to what's going on around. We need to discern and look and figure, this is right, this is wrong, this circumstance can lead in one particular way, this can lead in another. Now, think about it. What if Daniel had started out, and Ashpenaz says, "You're going to get the best food." And first of all, those other three fellows would know that food was not legal to eat, right? They didn't own it. What if Daniel had started out and said, "Well, just bring it on. Whatever it is, we're going to eat it, we're going to drink it, we're going to do all that." Well, the thing is, if he had started that way, the rest of the book wouldn't have come out the way it did. If he'd have started out... This is a simple matter. He had to be careful about what he was eating and drinking in order to please God. But if he'd started out breaking those commandments and thinking, well, you know, it's a difficult circumstance. We'll just give into it. Then the rest of it would have followed. It couldn't have followed the way it did. Those other three fellows wouldn't have had the good example. And then Nebuchadnezzar would not have had the example that he did. See, that, you know, I found out something. You listen to this. See what you think. Just see what you think. I found, when you're dealing with people out in the world, the thing that they, that bothers them the most is when you say one thing and do something else. Like James said, for him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. I was at the walking track, it's been a while. I was talking to a fellow that goes to a Methodist church, a good fellow, super fellow. And he told me, he said, you know, one thing I admire about some of y'all. You know what he meant when he said some of y'all. He said, y'all stick to your guns. You believe what you believe. Well, I got to thinking, you know, if I told that fellow, I said, listen, you need to come on over to our side because we really don't believe any of that stuff. You know, we just kind of, don't worry about those details, you know, about the instrument or about the Lord's Supper or baptism. Don't worry about any of that. If I'd have suggested to him that he could come and be with us and we'd compromise everything that we said we believed, he would have lost every ounce of respect he ever had for the Lord's church. As it is, he knew what he believed, and he knew I thought it was incorrect. But he knew what we believed, and he knew that I thought it was correct. You've got to stand by your principles. That always pays. That always pays. And, you know, we need to be kind, tactful, and loving when we stand by our principles. But one thing we can't do is compromise. Because if Daniel compromised to start with, we wouldn't be studying him tonight because he wouldn't be in the Bible. But he was a man of principle, discernment. He had to pay attention to what was going on, had to pay attention to the circumstances. So when, you know, he didn't know this verse, he knew the meaning that's behind this verse, but I put Colossians 3:17 in your outline. Whatsoever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord by the authority of the Lord. See, that's where Daniel was standing. He discerned, stood by his principles. Second thing, in order to be a principled person, is diligence. Not easy. It's not easy to be faithful to God. It's not easy to live by your principle because there's a lot of force in the world pushing you against that. You know, back in that passage of 2 Timothy 2:15, talking about study to show yourself approved unto God, or some of the translations say give diligence. Giving diligence is part and parcel of being a child of God. It takes some effort. The word study means to be diligent. It takes some effort to be a child of God. And Daniel put forth the effort. And it didn't matter what the circumstances were, he was going to do that. He was not going to allow circumstances to control his activity. And then the last thing I put there is detachment from the world. Daniel was in Babylon. And you look on a map, the map in the back of your Bible. You've got Israel and Judah's down here, and Babylon's up here. There's a lot of miles in between there. But there was a distance that was greater than physical distance. It was spiritual distance. He was a long way away from God's home spiritually, because Babylon was very much unlike Judah, particularly like Judah was supposed to be. And so Daniel had to keep himself in a way separate from what was going on around him. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, and the pride of life. Those are the things that for you and me today, 1 John 2:15 through 17, those are the things that pull us and cause us to be tempted to be separated. Another thing about Daniel's life that is a lesson for us. Daniel and his three friends trusted God no matter what. Now the three fellas, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel 3, you remember they faced the fiery furnace. And, you know, they're supposed to bow down and worship the statue and all that. And maybe Nebuchadnezzar took that business about the statue in Daniel 2 a little too seriously when he made his own statue, you see. But he said, well, you'll either bow down or we'll throw you in the furnace. And I said, well, you know, and it came up. They said, well, look, we don't know whether God will save us or not. He might save us, he might not save us. Depends on what he wants to do. It doesn't matter whether he does or not. We're not going to bow down to the idol. See, that shows you trust in God no matter what. You know, he might. It's like being in a sticky situation today, and there's an opportunity to get out of that sticky situation by doing something that God would not approve of. Say you're in a financial difficulty and there's an opportunity to get some money from a way that you shouldn't be getting it. You can say, well, you know, what do I do? What do I do? Well, you have faith in God, you trust God no matter what. You trust him, you do his will. And so they went to throw those fellows in, and the fellows who went to throw them in, they're the ones that got burned up. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they could be seen walking around in the fire. And it's my personal conviction that fourth figure, like unto the Son of Man, was the second person of the Godhead who would later become God in the flesh, Jesus Christ. And then Daniel faced the lion's den. Now, when you start studying the book of Daniel, we talked about this, you're talking about a young man. You're talking about a young fellow. When you get down over to the lion, you got an old man. And he lives even longer. But they get ready to throw that old man in the lion's den for praying. Like we started out with that Ralph Stanley thing. For praying. And that was a trick put together by the enemies of Daniel, who were jealous about how Daniel had risen up through the ranks and under Darius and others, you know, he was doing so well, and they were worried that he was going to take their place. And so they came up with this crazy story, a crazy theory, and really kind of turned the head of the king for just a moment or two to think that would be a good idea to do. But Daniel didn't. He wasn't worried. He wasn't worried. My youngest son, they had two cats last time we were up there. And those cats come up, and for some reason, they just hop right on my lap. Not the biggest cat fan in the world, but they hop right up on my lap. And I got to thinking, Daniel's down in that lion's den, stinky old place down there. And those big old lions came up, and they were just like little kittens for Daniel. Just like little kittens. Daniel was also a gifted prophet. One of the things that I love about the book of Daniel is the illustration of the fact that God's plan has been in his mind forever. And one of the passages that stands as an example of that activity is Daniel 2 and verse 44. So as he's interpreting this dream of Nebuchadnezzar, he says, "And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." Now that is a beautiful thing, because years and years and years later, the people who lived in Jerusalem looked back to Daniel chapter 2 and verse 44, although they didn't call it 2:44, they just looked back to the early part of Daniel. And they said, hey, it's getting to be time. Because in that interpretation of the figure in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the head of gold is Nebuchadnezzar. Then you got the Medes and the Persians. And then you got the Greeks and you get the Romans. And then the divided up Roman Empire. The feet and the toes and all of that. Those people could count. And they also knew a little bit of world history. And they said, it's time. And what did God lead Paul to say in Galatians chapter 4 and verse 4? In the fullness of time. You know, that passage reminds me of something. It reminds me that no matter what we might think, You know, things are out of control. Man, the world is just in a mess. It's out of control. It's out of our control. It's always been out of our control. There are forces of good in this world, and I still believe the United States is a force for good. There are other forces for good, but there are forces of evil in this world. And those two things are battling all the time. Not any particular time, but all the time. And we say, well, things are just out of control. They've never been as bad as they are now. Yeah, they have. Yeah, they have. When was the last time you went to bed hungry? A long time ago, wasn't it? If ever, I never have. My mom and daddy, if it was beans and cornbread, we still didn't go hungry. A lot of people in this world do. No, things aren't that bad for us, even though we'd like them to be better. But the fact is, remember, Daniel teaches, the book of Daniel teaches, God's in control. God is in control. I don't understand everything God has done, is doing, or will do. And if there's a man that comes in here and tells you he understands all of that, you watch him, because he don't either. But God is in control. And that's why, you know, at the end of Daniel, in Daniel chapter 12, and I know that bell is rung, the other one's going to ring. Daniel chapter 12, there's this vision of the shining man and all of that, and there is a reference in this book of Daniel. At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince, that's an archangel, who stands watch over the sons of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even at that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. Now, that's not a picture of something that happens according to the premillennialist or something like that. That's a picture of the end. That's a picture of the end of everything. And who's going to be delivered? Ones whose name is found written in the book. Revelation has that book in it. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Here, Daniel's book is brought into our lives. The lessons of Daniel about being principled, about praying, about being trusting of God, about using our gifts. Those lessons will come into play as we live our lives faithfully to God. And the reason we want to do that is very clear. When resurrection day comes, we want to be raised to everlasting life and not everlasting punishment. And we can't do that on our own. We have to rely on God's grace and mercy. Isn't that a blessing? Thank you for your attention.